get through? Ask me then. Ask me then. He glanced over to see Fiddler arriving. Only the neck of his fiddle left, hanging down his back, kinked strings sprung like errant hairs. Most of the red gone from his beard. His short sword scabbard was empty. He'd left the weapon jutting from a lizard's eye socket. The look in his blue eyes was cool, almost cold. Sergeant Tar, half a bell, and then lead them to the place.
Aye, Captain.
We got riders coming up from the south. Parrish, a few Cundrill, and someone else. A whole lot of someone else. Cuttle frowned.
Who?
Fiddler shrugged. Parley. We'll find out soon enough.
Told you you'd live.
Hennar Vigolf smiled up at her from where he lay on the cot, but it was an uncertain smile.
I did what you asked, Lastara. I watched.
Her gaze faltered.
Who are you?
He asked.
Don't ask me that. I see that question in every face. They all look at me. They say nothing.
She hesitated, staring down at her hands.
It was the shadow dance. It was every shadow dance.
She met his eyes suddenly.
It wasn't me. I just slipped back inside. And just like you, I watched.
If not you, then who?
The rope. Cotillion, the patron god of assassins.
She grimaced.
He took over. He's done things like that before, I think.
Hennar's eyes widened.
A god?
A furious god. I have never felt such rage. It burned right through me. It scoured me clean.
She unhooked her belt, tugged loose her scabbarded knife. She set it down on the blankets covering his wounded chest.
For you, my love. But be careful. It's very, very sharp.
The haunt is gone from your face, Lastara, said Hennar. You were beautiful before, but now...
An unintended gift, to be sure, she said with some diffidence. Gods are not known for mercy or compassion. But no mortal could stand in that blaze and not come through either burned to ashes or reborn.
Reborn, yes. A good description indeed. My boldness, he added with a rueful grimace, retreats before you now.
Don't let it, she snapped. I don't take mice to my bed, Hennar Vigolf.
I shall try, then, to find the man I was.
I will help, but not yet. The healers are far from finished with you.
She rose.
I must leave you now. The adjunct.
I think Bryce has forgotten me, or assumed me dead.
Don't think I'll be reminding him, she said. You ride at my side from now on.
Bryce.
Hardly. A word in private with Aranicht will do the trick, I think.
The king's brother is collared.
Next time you two meet, you can compare shackles.
Thought you disliked mice, Lastara Yil.
Oh, I expect you to struggle and strain at your chains, Hennar. It's the ones we can't tame that we keep under lock and key.
I see.
She turned to leave the hospital tent, saw the rows of faces turned to her, even among the cutters.
Hood's breath, she muttered.
Pleasantly drunk, Banaskar made his way towards the command tent. He saw Fist Blistig standing outside the entrance like a condemned man at the torturer's door.
Oh, you poor man. The wrong dead hero back there. You had your chance, I suppose. You could have been as brainless as Keneb. You could have stayed in his shadow right to the end, in fact, since you'd clearly been finding it such safe shelter for the past few months. But the sun finds no obstruction in painting you bright now. And how does it feel?
The man looked ill.
But you don't drink, do you? That's not last night's poison in your face, more's the pity.
Sick with fear, then, and Banaskar dredged up some real sympathy for the man.
A stir or two, clouding the waters, dulling the sharp edges of righteous satisfaction.
"Such a fine morning, Fist," he said upon arriving. "You'll be in trouble soon, High Priest."
"How so?"
"When the wine runs out."
Banaskar smiled.
"The temple's cellars remain well stocked, I assure you."
Blistig's eyes lit with something avid.
"You can just go there any time you want?"
"In a manner of speaking."
"So why do you remain? Why don't you flee this madness?"
"Because Holy Mother wants me here. I am her last priest. She has something in mind for me. Yes, she does."
"I am dreadfully sorry to tell you this, Fist, but that door is a private one, an exclusive one."
Blistig's face darkened. There were two guards outside the command tent, only a few paces away, well within earshot.
"I was suggesting you leave us, High Priest. You're a useless drunk, a bad influence on this army. Why the adjunct insists on your infernal presence at these gatherings baffles me."
"I am sure it does, Fist. But I can't imagine being such a dark temptation to your soldiers. I don't share my private stock, after all. Indeed, I suspect seeing me turns a soul away from the miseries of alcohol."
"You mean you disgust them?"
"Precisely so, Fist. But we really shouldn't be having this conversation, should we?
Because we could swap positions and apart from the drink, not a word need be changed. The real difference is, I lose nothing by their disgust, whereas you..."
"Do we await the lethary contingent, Fist?"
"Simple courtesy, High Priest."
"You liked that idea, did you?
Enough to latch onto it. Fine. Then I will keep you company for a time, at least until their approach."
"Don't leave it too long," Blistig said. "You'd give a bad impression."
"No doubt, and I shall not overstay the moment." "In fact," resumed Blistig, "I see the other Fists on their way. If you want your choice of seat in the tent, High Priest, best go in now."
"Well now, I can happily latch on to that."
"Tactical, Fist. I shall heed your advice."
Bowing, he turned and strode between the two guards. Catching the eye of one, he winked and received nothing in return. Lostara Yil turned at the shout to see four marines approaching her. A Dal Honey's sergeant, what was his name? Balm. Three soldiers trailed him, presumably what was left of his squad.
"You want something, Sergeant? Be quick, I'm on my way to the command tent."
"So are we," Balm said. "Got a healer here who maybe could do something for her."
"Sergeant, it doesn't work that way."
"It might,"
said the tall soldier with a scarred neck, his voice thin, the sound of stone wetting iron.
"Explain,"
another soldier said.
"We're thinking he's using an Elder Warren, Captain."
"A what? How in Hood's name can that be?"
The healer seemed to choke on something, and then he stepped forward.
"It's worth my trying, sir. I think Widdershins is right this time, for a change."
Lostara considered for a moment before nodding.
"Follow me."
Marines weren't in the habit of wasting people's time, and asking to step into the presence of the adjunct was, for most of them, far from a feverish ambition.
"So they think they've worked something out. It'd be worth seeing if they're right. Her headaches are getting worse. You can see it."
The command tent came into view, and she saw the Fists gathered at the entrance. They noted her approach, and whatever desultory conversation had been going on a moment earlier fell away.
"Fine, then, even you. Go ahead."
"Fists," she said,
"if you would be so good as to clear a path. These marines have an appointment with the adjunct."
"First I've heard of it," said Kindly.
"Well, as I recall," said Lostara, "the remaining heavies and marines are now under the command of Captain Fiddler, and he answers only to the adjunct.
I mean to address that with the adjunct, said kindly.
There's no point. That will have to wait until after the parley, Fist. Gesturing, she led the Marines between the company commanders. And will you all stop staring? Their attention tightened the muscles of her neck as she walked past, and it was a relief to duck into the tent's shadowed entranceway. Most of the interior canvas walls had been removed, making the space seem vast. Only at the far end was some privacy maintained for the adjunct sleeping area, with a series of weighted curtains stretching from one side to the other. The only occupant Lostara could see was Banaskar, sitting on a long bench with his back to the outer wall, arms crossed and seemingly dozing. There was a long table and two more benches and nothing else, not even a lantern. No, no lantern. The light stabs her like a knife. As the squad drew up behind Lostara, one of the curtains was drawn back. Adjunct Tavare stepped into view. Even from a distance of close to 10 paces, Lostara could see the sheen of sweat on that pallid brow.
Gods, if the army saw this, they'd melt like snow in the fire, vanish on the wind.
What are these Marines doing here, Captain? The words were weak, the tone wandering.
We await formal guests.
This squad's healer thinks he can do something for you, adjunct.
Then he is a fool.
The soldier in question stepped forward.
Adjunct, I am Corporal Deadsmell, 9th Squad. My warren was Hood's.
Her bleached eyes fluttered.
If I understand the situation, Corporal, then you have my sympathy.
He seemed taken aback.
Well, thank you, adjunct. The thing is...
He held up his hands and Lostara gasped as a flood of icy air billowed out around the healer. Frost limned the peaked ceiling. Deadsmell's breaths flowed in white streams. The mage, Widdershins, said,
Omtos Felak, adjunct. Elder?
Tavare was perfectly still, as if frozen in place. Her eyes narrowed on the healer.
You have found a jaggot for a patron, Deadsmell?
To that question, the man seemed at a loss for an answer.
The god of death is no more,
Widdershins said, his teeth chattering as the temperature in the chamber plummeted.
But it may be that Hood himself ain't quite as dead as we all thought he was.
We thought that, did we?
Tavare's lips thinned as she regarded Deadsmell.
Healer? Approach.
One hand twisting tight to keep the man upright, Balm guided Deadsmell back outside. Throat Slitter and Widdershins closed in from either side, the looks on their faces fierce, as if they were moments from drawing weapons should anyone come close. The fists backed away as one, and the sergeant scowled at them all.
Make room, if you please, sirs. Oh, and she'll see you now.
Without waiting a reply, Balm tugged Deadsmell forward, the healer staggering, his clothes sodden as frost and ice melted in the morning heat. 20 paces away, behind a sagging supply tent, the sergeant finally halted.
Sit down, Deadsmell. Gods below, tell me this'll pass.
The healer slumped to the ground. His head sank and the others waited for the man to be sick. Instead, they heard something like a sob. Balm stared at Throat Slitter and then at Widdershins, but by their expressions they were as baffled as he was. He crouched down, one hand resting lightly on Deadsmell's back. He could feel the shudders pushing through. The healer wept for some time. No one spoke. When the sobs began to subside, Balm leaned closer.
Corporal, what in Tog's name is going on with you?
I can't explain, Sergeant.
The healing worked, said Balm. We all saw it. He nodded, still not lifting his head.
So what? She let down her defenses just for a moment. Let me in, Sergeant. She had to, so I could heal the damage. And gods, was there damage? stepping into view. That must have taken everything she had. Standing, talking.
He shook his head.
I saw inside. I saw...
He broke down all over again, shaking with vast, overwhelming sobs. Balm remained crouched at his side. Widdershins and Throat Slitter stood forming a kind of barrier facing outward. There was nothing to do but wait. In the moments before the fists trooped inside, Lostariel stood facing Tavare. She struggled to keep her voice steady, calm.
Welcome back, adjunct.
Tavare slowly drew a deep breath. Your thoughts, High Priest? To one side, Banaskar lifted his head.
I'm too cold to think, adjunct.
Omptos Felak, have you felt the footfalls of the Jaghut, Banaskar? The ex-priest shrugged.
So Hood had a back door. Should we really be surprised? That devious shit of a god was never one for playing straight.
Disingenuous, High Priest. His face twisted.
Think hard on where your gifts come from, adjunct.
At last, she retorted, some sound advice from you, High Priest. Almost sober. If he planned on a reply, he bit it off when kindly Sort and Blistig entered the chamber. There was a stretch of silence, and then Faradan Sort snorted and said,
And here I always believed the chilly reception was just a...
I'm informed, cut in the adjunct, that our guests are on their way. Before they arrive, I wish each of you to report on the disposition of your soldiers. Succinctly, please. The fists stared. Lostariel glanced over at Banaskar and saw something flickering in his eyes as he studied the adjunct. Their approach took them down the north avenue of the Malazan encampment, winding down the crooked track between abattoir tents, where the stench of butchered animals was rank in the fly-swarmed air. Atreseda Aranicht rode in silence beside Commander Bryce, hunched against the bleating of Myrid and lowing of Rodara, the squeal of terrified pigs and the moaning of cattle. Creatures facing slaughter well understood their fate, and the sound of their voices crowding the air was a torment.
Ill-chosen, muttered Bryce, this route. My apologies, Atreseda.
Two soldiers crossed their path, wearing heavy blood-drenched aprons. Their faces were flat, expressionless. Their hands dripped gore.
Armies bathe in blood, said Aranicht. That is the truth of it, isn't it, Commander?
I fear we all bathe in it, he replied.
Cities permit us to hide from that bleak truth, I think.
What would it be like, I wonder, if we all ate only vegetables?
We'd break all the land and the wild animals would have nowhere to live, Bryce replied.
So we should see these domesticated beasts as sacrifices in the name of wildness.
You could, he said, if it helps.
I'm not sure it does.
Nor am I.
I think I am too soft for all this, she concluded. I have a sentimental streak. Maybe you can hide from the slaughter itself, but if you possess any imagination at all, well, there's no real hiding, is there?
They drew closer to a broad intersection, and opposite them a sizable troop of riders was converging on the same place, coming up from the south track.
Well now, said Bryce, are those Balkando royal standards?
Seems the Queen has taken her escort duties well beyond her kingdom's borders.
Yes, most curious. Shall we await them?
Why not?
They reined in at the intersection. The Queen's entourage was oversized, yet as it drew closer, Bryce frowned.
Those are Everteen regulars, I think, he said. Not an officer among them.
In addition to these hardened soldiers, three Bargast warriors rode close to Abrastel, while off to the right rode two Kundril women, one of them 7 or 8 months pregnant. On the left was a pair of armored foreigners, the Perish. Aranicht drew a sharp breath.
That must be mortal sword Krughava. She alone could command a palace tapestry.
Bryce grunted. I know what you mean. I have seen a few hard women in my time, but that one, formidable indeed.
I doubt I could even lift that sword at her belt.
With a gesture, Queen Abrastel halted the entire troop. She said something to one of her soldiers, and suddenly the veterans were all dismounting, lifting satchels from their saddle horns and setting out into the Malazan camp. Aranicht watched the soldiers fanning out, apparently seeking squad camps.
What are they doing?
Bryce shook his head. I'm not sure.
They've brought bottles.
Bryce Bedict grunted and then tapped his horse's flanks. Aranicht followed suit.
Commander Bryce Bedict, said Queen Abrastel, settling back in her saddle. We finally meet. Tell me, does your brother know where you are?
Highness, does your husband? Her teeth flashed.
I doubt it. But isn't this better than our meeting in anger?
Agreed, Highness.
Now, barring this gilk oaf at my side, and of course you, it seems this will be a gathering of women. Do you quake in your boots, Prince?
If I am man enough to not admit it, Highness. Will you be so kind as to perform introductions?
Abrastel removed her heavy gauntlets and gestured to her right. From the Cundrill, Hanavat, wife to warleader Gaul, and with her Shelamassa, bodyguard and one of the charge.
Bryce tilted his head to both women. Hanavat, we were witness to the charge. His gaze momentarily flicked to Shelamassa, then backed to Hanavat. Please, if you will, inform your husband that I was shamed by his courage and that of the burned tears. Seeing the Cundrill stung me to action. I would he understand that all that the Lethary were subsequently able to achieve in relieving the Bone Hunters is set in humble gratitude at the Warleader's feet.
Hanavat's broad, fleshy face remained expressionless. Most generous words, Prince. My husband shall be told.
The awkwardness of that reply hung in the dusty air for a moment. And then Queen Abrastel gestured to the parish.
Mortal Sword Krughava and Shield Anvil Tanakalian of the Grey Helms.
Once again, Bryce tilted his head. Mortal Sword? Shield Anvil?
You stood in our place 6 days ago, said Krughava, her tone almost harsh. This is now an open wound upon the souls of my brothers and sisters. We grieve at the sacrifice you suffered in our stead. This is not your war, after all. Yet you stood firm. You fought with valor. Should the opportunity ever arise, sir, we shall in turn stand in your place. This the Parish Grey Helms avow.
Bryce Bedict seemed at a loss. Aranicht cleared her throat and said,
You have humbled the prince, Mortal Sword. Shall we now present ourselves to the adjunct?
Queen Abrastel collected up her reins and swung her mount onto the track leading to the camp centre.
Will you ride at my side, Prince?
Thank you, Bryce managed. Aranicht dropped her mount just behind the two and found herself riding alongside the gilk oaf. He glanced across at her and his broad, scarified face was solemn.
That mortal sword, he muttered low. She comes across with all the soft sweetness of a mouthful of quartz. Well done to your commander for recovering.
Thank you.
Don't turn round, but if you did, you would see tears on the face of Hanavat. I think I like your commander. I am Spax, war chief of the Gilk Bargast.
Atricida Aranicht.
That means High Mage Aranicht, yes?
I suppose it does. Warchief, those Everteen soldiers who have gone out among the Malazans, what are they doing?
Spax reached up and made a clawing gesture beneath his eyes.
What are they doing, Atricida? Spirits below, they are being human.
Book 2. All the Takers of My Days.
Well enough she faces away, walking past these dripping thrones. No one knows where the next foot falls. When we stumble in the shadows, our standards bow to wizened winds. I saw that look beneath the rim of blistered iron, and it howled to the men kneeling in the square, and the dogs sleep on in the cool foot of the wall. No fools there. She was ever looking elsewhere, like a disenchanted damsel. A shift of her shoulder sprawls corpses into her wake. No matter. There was a child dream once, you remember well. Was she the mother, or did that tit seep seduction? All these thrones I built with my own hands, labors of love thin over ragged nails. I wanted benediction, or the slip away of clothes, whichever bends my way, behind her back. Oh, we were guards then, stern sentinels, and these grilled masks smelling of blood, now sweat something old. We never knew what we were guarding. We never do and never will. But I swear to you all, I will die at its feet before I take a step inside. Call me duty and be done with it, or roll from your tongue that sweet curl that is valor, while the dogs twitch in dream like children left lying underfoot. Adjunct. Hair Ravage. Chapter 5. She was dying, but we carried her down to the shore. There was light stretched like skin over her pain, but it was thin and fast fraying. None of us dared note in any whisper of irony how she who was named Awakening Dawn was now fading in this morning's wretched rise. Her weak gestures had brought her down here, where the silver waves fell like rain and the froth at the curling foot was flecked crimson. Bodies bloated and pale fanned limbs in the shallows, and we wondered at the fitness of her last command. Is it suit to face your slayer? Soon enough I will answer that for myself. We can hear the legions mustering again behind the flowing wall, and the others are drawing back to ready their rough line. So few left. Perhaps this is what she came to see before the killing light dried her eyes. Shake Fragment, Carcanus, author unknown. The black lacquered amphora emerged from the side door and skidded, rather than rolled, diagonally across the corridor. It struck the base of the marble banister at the top of the stairs, and the crack echoed sharp as a split skull before the huge vessel tilted and pitched down the steps. Shattering, it flung its shards in a glistening spray down the stone flight all the way to the main floor. Sparkling dust spun and twisted for a time before settling like flecks of frost. Withal walked over to the edge of the steps and looked down.
"That," he said under his breath, "was rather spectacular."
He turned at a sound behind him. Captain Brevity was leaning out from the doorway, glancing round until she spotted Withal.
"You'd better come in," she said.
"I was doing just that," he replied. "Five strides closer and she'd be a widow."
Brevity made a face he couldn't quite read and then edged to one side to let him pass. The throne room was still a chamber of ghosts. Black stone and black wood, the crimson and onyx mosaic of the floor dulled with dust and dried leaves that had wandered in from some high window. It seemed to hold nothing of the now brimming power of the Tarondarai, the holy sepulchre of Mother Dark. Yet for all that, Withal felt diminished as he stepped through the side entrance and edged out towards the centre of the room. The throne was on his right, raised on a knee-high dais that was, he realized, the vast stump of a blackwood tree. Roots snaked down to sink into the surrounding floor. The throne itself had been carved from the bowl, a simple, almost ascetic chair. Perhaps it had once been plush, padded, and bowled in rich fabrics, but not even the tacks remained. His wife stood just to the other side of the throne, her arms crossed, now dragging her glare from Jan Tovis, who stood facing the throne, as would a supplicant, to Withal.
"Finally," she snapped, "my escort. Take me out of here, husband."
Jan Tovis, queen of the Sheikh, cleared her throat.
"Leaving solves nothing." "Wrong. It solves everything."
The woman facing her sighed.
"This is the throne of the Tist Andi, and Karkanas is the capital of the Hold of Darkness. You are home, Highness." "Stop calling me that." "But I must, for you are of royal blood." "We were all of royal blood in this infernal city."
Sandalas Brukolat pointed a finger at Jan Tovis.
"As were the Sheikh. But our realm was and is the shore, Highness, whereas Karkanas is yours. But if it must be that there be only one queen, then I freely abdicate." "You will not. They are your people. You led them here, Jan Tovis. You are their queen. Upon this throne, Highness, only one of royal Tist Andi blood can make a true claim. And as we both well know, there is only one Tist Andi in this entire realm, and that is you."
"Fine. And over whom do I rule? Heaps of dust, moldy bones, blood stains on the floor? And where is my high priestess, in whose eyes Mother Dark shines? Where is my blind Galan, my brilliant tortured court fool? Where are my rivals, my hostages, my servants and soldiers, handmaidens and... Oh, never mind. This is pointless. I don't want that throne."
"Nonetheless," said Jan Tovis,
"very well. I accept it, and my first act is to abdicate and yield the throne and all of wise Karkanas to you, Queen Jan Tovis. Captain Brevity, find us a royal seal. There must be one lying around here somewhere, and parchment and ink and wax."
The Queen of the Sheikh was smiling, but it was a sad smile.
"Wise Karkanas, I had forgotten that honorific. Queen Sandalas Drukolat, I respectfully decline your offer. My duties are upon the shore."
She nodded to Brevity.
"Until such time that other Tist Andi return to Karkanas, I humbly submit Captain Brevity here to act as your chancellor, palace guard commander, and whatever other duties of organization as are required to return this palace to its former glory."
Sandalath snorted.
"Oh, clever. And I suppose a few hundred of your sheikh are waiting outside with mops and buckets." "Lethary, actually. Islanders and other refugees. They have known great privation, Highness, and will view the privilege of palace employment with humility and gratitude."
"And if I turn them all away? Oh, yes, I see the traps you've set around me, Jan Tovis. You intend to guilt me onto that accursed throne. But what if I am a harder woman than you?"
"The burden of rule hardens us both, Highness."
Sandalath cast Withal a beseeching look.
"Talk her out of this, husband."
"I would if I thought I had any chance of swaying her, beloved."
He strode to the base of the dais, eyeing the throne.
"Needs a cushion or two, I should think, before you could hope to sit there for any length of time."
"And you as my consort? Gods, don't you think I could do better?"
"Undoubtedly," he replied. "For the moment, however, you are stuck with me. And," he added with a wave at the throne, "with this. So sit down and make it official, Sand, so Jan Tovis can kneel or curtsy or whatever it is she has to do, and Brevity can get on with scrubbing the floors and beating the tapestries."
The Tist Andi woman cast about, as if seeking another amphora, but the nearest one stood perched on a stone cup near the side door, now an orphan, Withal saw, noting the unoccupied stone base on the entrance's other side. He waited to see if she'd make the fierce march to repeat her gesture of frustration and anger, but all at once his wife seemed to subside.
Thank Mael. That would have made her look ridiculous. Decorum, beloved, as befits the Queen of Darkness. Aye, some things you can't run from.
There will be two queens in this realm, Sandalath said, coming round to slump down in the throne. Don't even think of curtsying, Tovis. She eyed the Sheikh woman with something close to a glower.
Other Tist Andi, you said. Surely they have sensed Mother Dark's return,
Jan Tovis replied.
Surely they too understand that the diaspora is at last at an end.
Just how many Tist Andi do you imagine are left?
I don't know. But I do know this. Those who live shall return here, just as the Sheikh have done, just as you have done.
Good. First one gets here can have this throne and all that goes with it. Husband, start building us a cottage in the woods. Make it remote. No, make it impossible to reach. And tell none but me where it is.
A cottage?
Yes, with a drawbridge and a moat and pitfalls and sprawl traps.
I'll start drawing up plans.
Jan Tovis said,
Queen Sandalas, I beg your leave.
Yes, sooner the better. The ex-Lethary officer tilted her head, wheeled and strode from the chamber. Captain Brevity stepped forward to face the throne and settled on one knee.
Highness, shall I summon the palace staff?
In here? Abyss take me, no. Start with all the other rooms. Go on. You are, dismissed. Husband, don't even think of leaving.
The thought had not even occurred to me.
And he managed to hold his neutral expression against her withering skepticism. As soon as they were alone, Sandalas sprang from the throne as if she'd just found one of those ancient tacks.
That bitch!
Withal flinched.
Yan! No, not her. She's right, the cow. I'm stuck with this for the moment. Besides, why should she be the only one to suffer the burden of rule, as she so quaintly put it?
Well, put it that way, and I can see how she might be in need of a friend.
An equal of sorts, yes. The problem is, I don't fit. I'm not her equal. I didn't lead 10,000 people to this realm. I barely got you here.
He shrugged.
But here we are.
And she knew.
Who?
That bitch Tavore. Somehow she knew this would happen.
There is no proof of that, Sand,
Withal replied.
It was Fiddler's reading, not hers.
She made a dismissive gesture.
Technicalities, Withal. She trapped me, is what she did. I should never have been there. No, she knew there was a card waiting for me. There's no other explanation.
But that's no explanation at all, Sand.
The look she threw him was miserable.
You think I don't know that?
Withal hesitated.
Listen, he said. Your kin are coming. Are you really certain you want me standing there at your side when they do?
Her eyes narrowed.
What you're really saying is, do I want to be standing at her side when they arrive? A mere human, a short-lived plaything to the Queen of Darkness. That's how you think they'll see you, isn't it?
Well,
you're wrong. It will be the opposite, and that might be just as bad. They'll see you for what you are, a threat.
A what?
She regarded him archly.
Your kind are the inheritors of everything. And here you are, along with all those Lethary and blood-thin Sheikh squatting in Carcanus. Is there anywhere you damned bastards don't end up sooner or later? That's what they'll be thinking.
Mael knows they've got a point,
he said, looking away, down the length of the throne room, imagining a score or more regal Tist Andi standing there, eyes hard, faces like stone.
I'd better leave.
No, you won't. Mother Dark.
Abruptly, she shut her mouth. He turned his head, studied her.
Your goddess is whispering in your ear, Sand, about me?
You'll be needed, she said, once more eyeing the lone amphora. All of you, the leathery refugees, the Sheikh, and it's not fair, it's not fair.
He took her arm as she moved to assault the crockery, pulled her round until she was in his arms. Startled, terrified, he held her as she wept.
Mael, what awaits us here?
But there was no answer, and his god had never felt so far away. Yedan Derig dragged the tip of the husked sword, making a line in the crumbled bones of the shore. The cascading wall of light flowed in reflection along the length of the ancient blade, like tears of milk.
We are children here, he muttered.
Captain Pithy hawked phlegm, stepped forward and spat into the wall, and then turned to face him.
Something tells me we'd better grow up fast, watch.
Yedan clenched his teeth, chewed on a half dozen possible responses to her grim observation, before saying,
Yes.
The face is in the wash, said Pithy,
nodding at the eternally descending rain of light rearing before them.
There's more of them, and seems they're getting closer, as if clawing their way through. I'm expecting to see an arm thrust out any time now.
She hitched her thumbs in her weapon belt.
Thing is, sir, what happens then?
He stared into the lightfall, tried remembering memories that weren't his own. The grinding of molars sounded like distant thunder in his head.
We fight.
And that's why you've recruited everyone with arms and legs into this army of yours.
Not everyone. The Lethary Islanders
can smell trouble better than anyone. Convicted criminals, almost the whole lot. It's a case of the nerves all around, sir, and soon as they figure things out, they'll start stepping up.
He eyed the woman.
What makes you so sure, Captain?
Soon as they figure things out, I said.
What things?
That there's nowhere to run to, for one,
she replied.
And that there won't be any bystanders. No, what's the word? Non-combatants. We got us a fight for our very lives ahead. You deny it?
He shook his head, studied the play of light on the blade again.
We will stand on the bones of our ancestors.
He glanced at Pithy.
We have a queen to protect.
Don't you think your sister will be right here in the front line?
My sister? No, not her. The queen of Carcanus.
It's her we're gonna die protecting? I don't get it, sir. Why her?
He grimaced, lifted the sword and slowly sheathed it.
We are of the shore. The bones at our feet are us, our history, our meaning. Here we will stand. It is our purpose.
Memories not his own, yet still they stirred.
Our purpose.
Yours, maybe. The rest of us just want to live another day, get on with things, making babies, tilling the ground, getting rich, whatever.
He shrugged, eyes now on the wall.
Privileges, Captain, we cannot at the moment afford to entertain.
I ain't happy about the thought of dying for some Tistandi queen, Pithy said, and I doubt I'm alone in that. So maybe I take back what I said earlier. There could be trouble ahead.
No, there won't.
Plan on cutting off a few heads?
If necessary.
She muttered a curse.
I hope not. Like I said before, so long as they all realize there's nowhere to go. Should be enough, shouldn't it?
When no answer was forthcoming, she cleared her throat and said,
Well, it comes down to saying the right things at the right time. Now, watch, Derig, you might be an errant-shitting warrior and a decent soldier, too, but you're lacking the subtleties of command.
There are no subtleties in command, Captain. Neither my sister nor me is one for rousing speeches. We make our expectations plain and we expect them to be met. Without complaint, without hesitation, it's not enough to fight to stay alive. We must fight determined to win.
People ain't stupid. Well, forget I said that. Plenty of them are. But something tells me there's a difference between fighting to stay alive and fighting for a cause bigger than your own life, or even the lives of your loved ones or your comrades. A difference, but for the life of me, I couldn't say what it is.
You were always a soldier, Captain?
Pithy snorted.
Not me. I was a thief who thought she was smarter than she really was.
Yedan considered that for a time. Before him, blurred faces pushed through the light, mouths opening, expressions twisting into masks of rage. Hands stretched to find his throat, clutched empty. He could reach out and touch the wall if he so chose. Instead, he observed the enemy before him.
What cause, Captain, would you fight for? In the manner you describe, beyond one's own life or those of loved ones.
Now that's the question, isn't it? For us Lethary, this ain't our home. Maybe we could come to want it to be in time, a few generations soaking our blood into the land. But there won't be any time, not enough for that.
If that is your answer.
No, it ain't. I'm working on it, sir. It's called thinking things through. A cause, then. Can't be some Tistandi queen or her damned throne or even her damned city. Can't be Yan Tovis, even though she brought them all through and so saved their lives. Memories die like beached fish, and soon enough just the smell will do to drive them away. Can't be you, neither.
Captain, said Yedan Derig, if the enemy destroy us, they will march down the road of Galan. Unobstructed, they will breach the gate to your own world, and they will lay waste to every human civilization until nothing remains but ash. And then they will slay the gods themselves, your gods.
If they're that nasty, how can we hope to hold them here?
Yedan nodded at the lightfall.
Because, Captain, there is only one way through. This stretch of beach, 1,000 paces wide. Only here is the wall scarred and thin from past wounds. Only here can they hope to break the barrier. We bar this door, Captain, and we save your world.
And just how long are we supposed to hold them back?
He ruminated for a moment, and then he said,
as long as needed, Captain.
She rubbed at the back of her neck, squinted at Yedan for a time, and then looked away.
How can you do that, sir?
Do what?
Stand there, so close, just watching them. Can't you see their faces? Can't you feel their hatred? What they want to do to you?
Of course.
Yet there you stand.
They serve to remind me, Captain.
Of what?
Of why I exist.
She hissed between her teeth.
You just sent a chill right through me.
I asked about a worthy cause.
Yeah, saving the world. That might work.
He shot her a look.
Might?
True, you'd think saving your world is a good enough reason for doing anything and everything, wouldn't you?
Isn't it?
People being what people are, we'll see.
You lack faith, Captain.
What I lack is proof to the contrary, sir. I ain't seen it yet in all my years. What do you think makes criminals in the first place?
Stupidity and greed.
Besides those, I'll tell you. It's looking around real carefully. It's seeing what's really there and who wins every time. And it's deciding that despair tastes like shit. It's deciding to do whatever it takes to sneak through, to win what you can for yourself. It's also condemning your fellow humans to whatever misery finds them, even if that misery is by your own hand. To hurt another human being is to announce your hatred of humanity. But mostly your thinking is about hating back what already hates you. A thief steals, telling herself she's evening out crooked scales. That's how we sleep at night, you see.
A fine speech, Captain.
Tried making it short as I could, sir.
So indeed you are without faith.
I have faith that what's worst in humanity isn't hard to find.
It's all around us, sour as a leaking bladder, day after day. It's the stink we all get used to. As for what's best, maybe, but I wouldn't push all my stacks of coin into the center of the table on that bet.
She paused and then said,
Thinking on it, there's one thing you could do to buy their souls. And that is, empty out the palace treasury and bury it 10 paces up the beach. And make a show of it. Maybe even announce that it's, you know, the sword's gold, to be divided up at day's end.
And would they fight to save the soldier beside them? I doubt it.
Good point. Then announce a fixed amount, and whatever is unclaimed on account of the soldier being dead goes back into the treasury.
Well, Captain, you could petition the Queen of Darkness.
Oh, I can do better. Sister Brevity's the treasurer now.
You are a cynical woman, Captain Pithy.
In case saving the world don't work, that's all. Make getting rich the reward and they'll eat their own children before backing a single step.
And which of the two causes would you more readily give your life for, Captain?
Neither, sir.
His brows lifted. She spat again.
I was a thief once. Plenty of hatred then, both ways. But then I walked a step behind your sister and watched her bleed for us all. And then there was you too, for that matter. That rearguard action that saved all our skins. So now, she scowled at the lightfall. Well, I'll stand here and I'll fight until the fight's left them or it's left me.
Yedan studied her in earnest now.
And why would you do that, Pithy Islander?
Because it's the right thing to do, Yedan Derig.
Rightness. The word was lodged in Jan Tovis's throat like shards of glass. She could taste blood in her mouth, and all that had seeped down into her stomach seemed to have solidified into something fist-sized, heavy as stone. The shore invited her, reached out and clawed at her with its need, a need it yearned to share with her.
You stand with me, Queen, as you once did, as you shall do again. You are the Sheik, and the Sheik are of the shore, and I have tasted your blood all my life. Queen, I thirst again. Against this enemy there shall be rightness upon the shore, and you will stand, and you will yield not a step.
But there was betrayal long ago. How could the Leosan forget? How could they set it aside? Judgment, the coarse, thorn-studded brambles of retribution, they could snag an entire people, and as the blood streamed down, each body was lifted higher, lifted from the ground. The vicious snare carried them into the righteous sky. Reason could not reach that high, and in the heavens madness spun untamed.
Rightness rages on both sides of the wall. Who can hope to halt what is coming? Not the Queen of Darkness, not the Queen of the Sheik, not Yedan Derig. Oh no, my brother strains for that moment. He draws his wretched sword again and again. He smiles at the lightfall's lurid play on the blade. He stands before the silent shrieking insanity of hatred made manifest, and he does not flinch.
But, and this was the impossible contradiction, her brother had not once in his life felt a single spasm of hatred. His soul was implacably incapable of such an emotion. He could stand in the fire and not burn. He could stand before those deformed faces, those grasping hands, and
nothing. Oh, Yedan, what waits within you? Have you surrendered completely to the need of the shore? Are you one with it? Do you know a single moment of doubt? Does it?
She could understand the seductive lure of that invitation. Absolution through surrender, the utter abjection of the self. She understood it, yes, but she did not trust it.
When that which offers blessing predicates such on the absolute obeisance of the supplicant, demands, in fact, the soul's willing enslavement, no,
How could such a force stand tall in moral probity? The shore demands our surrender to it, demands our enslavement in the glory of its love, the sweet purity of its eternal blessing. There is something wrong with that, something monstrous. You offer us the freedom of choice, yet avow that to turn away is to lose all hope of glory, of salvation. What sort of freedom is that? She had held that her faith in the shore set her above other worshippers, those quivering mortals kneeling before fickle, carnate gods. The shore was without a face. The shore was not a god, but an idea, the eternal conversation of elemental forces, changeable, yet forever unchangeable, the binding of life and death itself, not something to be bargained with, not a thing with personality, mercurial and prone to spite. The shore, she had believed, made no demands. But now here she was, feeling the desiccated wind rising up from the bone strand, watching her brother speaking to Pithy, seeing her brother less than a stride away from Lightfall's terrible fury, drawing his sword again and again, and the first shore howled in her soul.
Here, blessed daughter, I am here, and with me you belong. See this wound, you and I shall close it. My bones, your blood. The death underfoot, the life with sword in hand. You shall be my flesh, I shall be your bone. Together we will stand, changeable and unchangeable, free and enslaved.
A figure edged up on her right, and then another on her left. She looked to neither. The one on the right crooned something melodic and wordless, and then said,
"Ween decided, Queen, Squish to stand with the watch and mine to stand with you." "And the shore and the day," added Squish, "listen to it sing."
Pully moaned again.
"Ye ain't knelt afore the shore, Highness. Ye ain't done it yet. And be sure ye need to, afore the breach comes." "E'en the Queen's got to surrender," said Squish, "to the shore."
Crumbled bones into chains, freedom into slavery. Why did we ever agree to this bargain? It was never equal. The blood was ours, not the shore's. Errant fend, even the bones came from us. Empty throne, my certainty is gone. My faith crumbles. Don't my people deserve better? Pully snorted.
Single drop of shake in them, they hear the song. They yearn to come, to stand, to fight,
finished Squish.
But they deserve better.
Go down to the shore, Highness. E'en you taint above the first shore.
Jan Tovis grimaced.
You think to force me, Pully? Squish?
If your brother
hadn't killed all your allies,
Jan Tovis said, nodding.
Yes, oddly enough, I don't think he fully comprehended the consequences. Did he? 100 and more witches and warlocks. Yes, they could compel me, perhaps. But you two? No.
Is a mistake, Highness.
Didn't stop you feeding on my blood, did it? Made young again, and now you roll like sluts in every man's tent.
E'en Witch Slayer says...
Yes, you all say. Kneel, O Queen. Surrender to the shore, sister. You know, the only person here who comes close to understanding me isn't even human. And what did I do? I destroyed the friendship growing between us by forcing her onto the throne of Dark. I fear she will never forgive me.
Jan Tovis gestured suddenly.
Both of you, leave me now.
As witches, we got to warn ye.
And so you have, Pully. Now go, before I call Yedan up here to finish what he started all those months ago.
She listened to their footfalls in the sand and then through the grasses. Below, on the shore, Captain Pithy was departing, moving off to the left, probably making her way to the Lethary encampment. Her brother remained, though now he began walking the length of the strand.
Like a caged cat. But remember, dear brother, the Hust sword broke.
She lifted her gaze, studied the hissing storm of light, high above the blurred shapes of Leosan warriors.
She was not sure, but at times lately she'd thought she'd seen vast shapes wheeling up there.
Clouds, thunderheads.
Rightness was a vicious word. Is it right to demand this of us? Is it right to invite us in one breath and threaten us in the next? Am I not queen of the Sheikh? Are these not my subjects? You would I simply give them to you? Their blood, their lives? Errant's nudge. How I envy Sandalas Drukolat, the queen with no subjects.
The liquid sky of lightfall was a thick, opaque swirl. No thunderheads today. Seeing that should have relieved her, but it didn't. Upon the great spire overlooking Kolanth's Bay, five Pures ascended the steep stairs carved into the crater's ravaged flank. To their right, as they climbed towards the Altar of Judgment, the slope fell away to a sheer cliff, and far below the seas thrashed, the waters raging into foaming spume the color of mare's milk. Centuries of pounding fury had gnawed into the spire, down to its very roots, apart from a narrow, treacherous isthmus on the inland side. From above, foul winds bled down, pulled towards the waves in endless streams. At times, shriven had been poisoned in their pilgrimage, here on the weathered pumice steps, but the Pures could withstand such vicissitudes, and when they passed the shriveled corpses huddled against the stairs, they simply stepped over them. The Pure who was named Reverence led the way. She was eldest among those who remained in close proximity to the great spire. Tall even for a Forkrel Asael, she was exceedingly gaunt, almost skeletal. Thousands of years upon this world had turned her once white skin a sickly grey, worn through to bruised tones around her joints, including those of her double-hinged jaw and the vertical epiphysis that bisected her face from chin to forehead. One eye had been blinded centuries past in a battle with a Jaghut, a tusk slash as they struggled to tear out each other's throat, and the ferocity of that bite had dented the bones of the socket, collapsing the brow ridge on that side. She favored her right leg as the effort of the ascent shot lancing pain through her left hip. Atlani Mas' sword thrust had very nearly disemboweled her on another rise of stone steps on a distant continent and long, long ago. Even as the flint weapon stabbed into her, she had torn the warrior's head from its shoulders.
The demands of adjudication are not for the weak,
she would say from time to time, whispered as something akin to a mantra, tempering true once more the iron of her will. Yes, the climb had been a long one for them all, but soon the summit would heave into view, pure and bristling, and the final death blows would be delivered.
Judgment upon humanity. Judgment upon this broken, wounded world. We shall cleanse. It is not what we chose for ourselves. This burden, in truth, does not belong to us. But who will stand to defend this world? Who but the Forkrel Asael can destroy all the humans in this realm? Who but the Forkrel Asael can slay their venal gods? The oldest justice of all is the justice of the possible. Hunter and prey, death or escape, to feed or to starve. Each plays to what is possible, and the victims strive to answer their needs. And that is all there is, all there ever need be. I remember grasses in the wind. I remember skies filling with birds from horizon to horizon. I remember weeping at the silence in the years that followed, when these furtive killers edged out into the world and killed all they could. When they walked ancient shorelines and thrust their greed like bone knives into new lands. We watched, we grieved, we grew into the iron of anger, and then rage. And now, Now we are cold and saturn.